Hello, this is Frankly Speaking, an informational exchange of problems and issues of relevance to people everywhere. Today's program addresses the subject of the quality of education in our public schools. I'm Stephanie Hopkins for George Mason University. Before I introduce my entire panel, I'd like for you to meet Eugene Kinlow, President of the Board of Education for DC Public Schools.
For the last 100 years or so, the United States has stood out among all nations of the world because of its commitment to public education. In the last decade or so, some rather distressing news have occurred. There seems to be a diminution of public support for public education in terms of the amount of money that's being voted to support public education, and in terms of the credibility that public education enjoys among the citizenry. But given the fact that we're in the midst of a technological explosion, since Sputnik, for example, we've added more technical and scientific knowledge to the information base than occurred during the previous 2,000 years, it means that if we're going to continue to have a viable and civilized and economically sound society for the future, our children and grandchildren, we cannot afford to do any less than we have in the past for quality education.
To elaborate on the subject, my other panelist is Jack Burkholder, Deputy Superintendent for Support Services, Fairfax County Public Schools. Welcome to the program. Exactly, how do you define education? I know that sounds like a very simple question, but how would you actually define it, especially in our public school system?
Education is a learning experience, hopefully, for those people who have the opportunity to participate in our programs across the country. It is certainly an experience that hopefully will be a meaningful one with respect to learning not only matters of an academic nature, but learning to live with other people, preparing oneself for future opportunities in life, and indeed preparing oneself for the present.
Prior to the program, we were discussing the actual structures of your individual organizations, and I'd like for you to brief our listening audience on exactly how your public school system relates to either your superintendent, to your board of supervisors, if there is such a thing, and in essence the school board, and how that relates to government in general. Just a brief structure.
In the state of Virginia, the school boards exist under the aegis of the Constitution of Virginia and under the direction of the State Board of Education. There is, of course, a relationship with the governing body. In Fairfax County, for example, that governing body is the Board of Supervisors. The relationship that exists between the two boards formally is that the Board of Supervisors has the responsibility to appoint the school board members and also to set the amount of the budget. Of course, there is also an informal relationship having to do with various matters concerning the operation of the school system. For example, in the setting of the budget, the Board of Supervisors and the school board have to take into account the fact that there are similar employees working on both sides of the fence, and they therefore must work together in the development of salary scales, benefits, etc.
How does that relate to the District of Columbia, Mr. Kinlow?
Well, in the District of Columbia, the Board of Education is also considered to be an independent agency. It's also unique in the sense that the Board of Education is both a local education agency as well as a state education agency combined into one. In terms of budget matters, we of course have to rely not only upon the City Council and the Mayor, but in terms of final approval upon the Congress itself. Like Fairfax, I believe once that budget mark is set, of course we have the latitude in terms of how that money is spent. We of course select the superintendent and set the policy for the school system, and the superintendent manages the school system on a day-to-day basis.
Both of you have mentioned budgets, and I think that's a very crucial topic in this day and age, especially since the inflation rate is ever increasing, although it's been said by the Washington Post that we have had a recent reduction, or at least not an increase. My question at this point is, how are budgets faring in education? What do we have to look forward to, or what sort of problems are we actually facing within the next 5 to 10 years?
Well, we're certainly having a problem in the District of Columbia. The Washington Post, you just mentioned, recommended in an editorial a few days ago that we be given for FY82, $265 million, which of course is what we requested. However, the budget mark that's on the Hill right now before Congress is $248 million, and that kind of illustrates the problem we're having, because we certainly do need the $265 million. What has happened in the last couple of years is that we've had an absolute increase of 1% in our budget over the previous year. And if we get to $248 million, that will be three consecutive years where we will have had a 1% increase each year. If you make the adjustment for both inflation and for declining enrollment in terms of purchasing power, we are losing 5% of our budget each year. And that can continue for another 5 or 10 years. If it does, the school system certainly couldn't continue to improve its educational quality.
We, too, are having budgetary difficulties. I must say, however, that the citizens in Fairfax County have historically supported the school board financially over the years, and, of course, through the Board of Supervisors. We have just recently enjoyed, if you will, a $3.6 million decrease in our budget as voted upon by the Board of Supervisors, and we are in the process now of determining how we can absorb that kind of a loss. It will, of course, affect what we're able to do next year. We haven't made a determination yet as to just how we can absorb it. I would have to add that I think it's realistic to expect that in the future these budgetary difficulties are going to continue. We will have to make the best of it. The greatest difficulty we will have in Fairfax, and I am sure Washington will have a similar problem, is the potential for withdrawal of large amounts of federal aid, and in Fairfax we would add to that withdrawal of state aid as well.
How are board members elected?
Well, in the case of Washington, they are elected two ways, essentially. One member is elected for a four-year term from each of the eight wards or political subdivisions in the city. In addition, there are three members elected at large, for a total of 11 elected board members.
In Fairfax County, board members are appointed by the school board. There are 10 members appointed. Eight are appointed in accordance with the district in which they live. Two are appointed at large, and then one student member is also elected by the student body and officially appointed by the Board of Supervisors. The student member is a non-voting member.
So many times the quality of education is attributed to the individuals that are responsible for rendering that education, going to the top, possibly your board, your superintendent, your principals, assistant principals, and finally your teachers that are in the classroom. Of course, a number of people tend to forget that parents also play a very important role in education. What is happening in this day and age in terms of this responsibility? Are people assuming more or less responsibility for the task that is before them?
I'd like to reverse the order of employees and board members as you just listed them. I think the most important persons, employees, that we have to be concerned about are the teachers in the classroom. If everything goes well in the classroom, despite whatever other problems we may have, we can be assured that we are enjoying quality education. It begins and ends in the classroom. You must have support from administrators. You must have supplies and materials and equipment, adequate buildings in which to teach. But in the final analysis, what happens between that teacher and that child is what is really important.
While not disagreeing with Jack, I think a slightly different perspective that I'd like to share is that from the standpoint of accountability, you have to make sure that the building manager, the educational leader, we often call the principal, is fully capable of setting the tone in that particular building, making sure that there is a quality of education, making sure that teachers who can perform adequately are recognized, and that teachers and other staff who don't perform adequately are also taken care of. So I think from the standpoint of accountability, we cannot afford to ignore that the principal of that particular school, any particular school.
What is actually standing in the way of the quality of education in our public schools? If you had to cite one or two avenues that would actually make the difference besides money, what would we be talking about at this point?
Well, we'd certainly be talking about the level of support that comes from the entire community. I certainly think that in Washington, D.C., we don't have the level of community support, particularly parental support, that we would like to have. I just think that the level of expectation and involvement and support almost dictates, and you can almost determine in advance the quality of education you're going to get by what the community demands, and we haven't had that to the degree that we ought to have it.
Are PTAs effective in Fairfax County?
Very effective. PTAs should be given accolades, if you will, for the support that they have provided in budget hearings, both last year and this year in particular. They are effective in many other respects, and I don't know where we would really be without that kind of support. I would just like to add one comment to your question to Gene a moment ago. I certainly agree that resources are essential if we are going to remove the blockages to quality education. I want to express one additional fear that I have for the future, and that has to do with the availability of qualified teachers for our schools. The surplus that once existed is no longer a surplus. We are indeed experiencing shortages of teachers in many subject areas, and I worry, based on the figures that I read, that that shortage may increase. That may very well be one of our major obstacles in the future.
That's certainly one of the problems that we have, particularly in the areas of math and science, being able to attract and retain highly qualified individuals, given the competition in the other part of the labor market for such kind of talent.
Gentlemen, I'd like to thank you both for being here. Unfortunately, our time is up, and probably we'll have to have a part two at some particular point. You've been listening to Frankly Speaking, a public affairs program produced by George Mason University. Pat Ping, production coordinator. For information about our guest or this program, please call area code 703-323-2138. I'm Stephanie Hopkins for the State University in Northern Virginia. Thank you for listening.
As educators, I believe that we have a responsibility to provide something for everyone, age almost at birth until one nears death. I believe that we are meeting that responsibility in a manner that is satisfactory to most people, and we hope in a manner that we can continue to improve upon.